Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Wednesday full of juice and energy, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Nick Nurse of the Raptors stops by today. Nick Wright of FS1 stops by today. Weston McKennie, who, by the way, is one of the great American soccer players. Team USA, United States men's national team, just won a tournament, beat Mexico. He'll be on the show today. Joy, that was a fun night. I went home last night, ordered a pizza from John and Vinny's down the street.
I have to try that place.
Oh, it's fantastic. I didn't even acknowledge my family. They were like, I don't know if I feel like pizza. I'm like, I do. That's what I'm having for
dinner. What'd you get on the pizza?
I went margarita.
Ooh.
And I mean, it had no shot. It was playoff intensity. I didn't take a breath. It had no shot. Full court press on the pizza. It was over in like 8 minutes. So I want to talk about this. That was the best single loss by any team in the playoffs last night, the Clippers. That was a great loss. We say this all the time about football. Like, you can win a game and be concerned, right? Like, you can lose a game and go, yeah, we should have lost that game. I was talking to Michael Strahan yesterday when the Giants lost to the Patriots years ago, the final week of the season in New York. Remember, they went and played them later in the Super Bowl. OCU Mignora put his arm around Michael Strahan. He said, fella, we play them again. We're beating them. They're not better than us. Like, you lose games and get a lot of confidence. If I'm a Clipper fan this morning, I feel great. Utah had 6 days off. Clippers had none. They flew yesterday or the day before yesterday. I mean, the Jazz were at home. The Jazz were rested. The Jazz had a layered game plan. Here is the Clippers schedule minutes before last night's game in the 6 days before they faced the Jazz. Now, think about this. They played a game five in L.A., then a three-hour flight to Dallas. Then they played Dallas, and then a three-hour flight back to Los Angeles. Then they played Game 7. Then they got back on a plane. Wake up that day, they play Utah. So they traveled. They were on three flights and played three games. And then they had to play in the loudest arena so far this year. It was the first time the Jazz had played full capacity. And that place was a snake pit last night. That was the toughest road game for any team. Maybe the Hawks and the Knicks, they had an argument, but there were some seats in Madison Square Garden that were not filled. That place last night was like a college arena in the Final Four. The Clippers could have easily folded last night. They had a dreadful third quarter. They could have folded last night. They were out of energy. Nope. Came roaring back. The Clippers shot a better free throw percentage last night than the Jazz. They shot a better three-point percentage last night in the Jazz. They shot a better field goal percent last night in the Jazz. And that's with Paul George stinking up the place and Kawhi being ineffective. If you're a Clipper fan, this morning I wake up and I'm like, Clippers in six. I mean, they fell behind to Dallas 0-2, and then they won four of the next five games and kind of dominated them late. You got a bunch of factors here. Mike Conley's out. I don't know how long. Not good. He changes the pace. He's out. Number two, Kawhi Leonard was ineffective, kind of a non-factor. Paul George, I know sometimes he struggles in the playoffs, but he was particularly bad, 4-for-17. You got only two Clippers were in double digits. It's the loudest home arena all year. I mean, that thing was, I mean, the Clippers have been playing, you know, marginal crowds, semi-crowds, 70% full. And by the way, then Donovan Mitchell had the greatest game of his career and the best half of basketball by any player in the NBA this year. I love Donovan Mitchell. I love Spida. Great kid. Great player. Huge fan. He's not going to have another half like that in the series. There's no way. And folks, here's the other thing. Quinn Snyder is one of the best coaches in the NBA, but because he coaches in Utah, you know, we don't talk about him. Quinn Snyder's a great coach. He had 6 days to put in a game plan. He probably spent three on the Clippers and three on the Mavericks. Ty Lue had less than a day. He's on a plane. He's back home. They play a game. He's got interviews. He's got media. He's got, you got to be, that's like giving Andy Reid a bye week. I mean, we always know the best football coaches when you have Andy Reid, Bill Belichick, Nick Saban. It's always been that way. Barry Alvarez. When you get bowl game records, Urban Meyer bowl game records, Lou Holtz bowl game records. When you give really good coaches extra time, the really good coaches take advantage of it. Quinn Snyder had like 5 days advantage, 5.5 days on Ty Lue. And so that was not a fair fight last night. That was not a fair fight. For the Clippers to lose by a shot, they took two shots at the end. One was blocked. One of those goes in, we're going to overtime. And that is as good a loss as you can have. Paul George after the game.
We just continue to give ourselves chances. I think that's the positive. That terrible third quarter to start the half. I mean, they're playing desperation ball the whole night. And, you know, we didn't match it until late. But, you know, I think the positive out of it is, you know, we gave ourselves a chance. Regardless we gave this one up with a flat third, we still gave ourselves a chance to win this.
Next game. Equally rested, the coaches equally prepared. Spider Mitchell's not doing that in the second half. Kawhi and Paul George will play better than that. Game on, series on. I like the Clippers. So I'm ashamed of myself. One of the things about this job that I think is really fun, I mean, listen, Bill Belichick struggles, we all know this, drafting players. Best football coach ever. He struggles in the draft. A lot of it's guessing. I mean, you don't get much tape on players. You don't know if he can be good in the NFL. Bill Belichick, and that's in the NFL where you get, you know, at least multiple years of tape, is not very good in the draft. Now, there are coaches that are legendarily good in the draft. Jimmy Johnson was great with personnel. There are these coaches that are just fantastic. Jason Light, the general manager of Tampa Bay, that dude just owns the draft. Belichick, best coach ever, not great. In basketball, it's even harder. You get less tape. So I'm not going to crush a general manager. I mean, Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens had 1,000 picks. They hit one home run, Jason Tatum, and two other doubles, Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. A lot of misses. Okay, it's hard. And I fell for Ben Simmons. I grew up with Magic Johnson. I fell for Ben Simmons. 6'11 point guard. Great defense. I mean, he's got a swagger. Great ball handler. He's got Magic Johnson's vision. He can finish at the rim. He can't shoot. I know he can't shoot. Magic wasn't a great shooter when he came in either. And I've always said I'd take Simmons over Embiid because Embiid, I know he's going to fall apart. He's got a torn meniscus now in this series. I'm ashamed of myself. I'm going to go with Embiid. I decided last night. Ben Simmons, 2 games in this series, 3-for-12 from the free throw line. Total non-factor, 35 minutes last night, 4 points, 3 shots. He just doesn't care. You know what it reminds me of? And this is something I can't stand. Indifference. Joy cares about this job. I have no problem when people make mistakes out of passion. Indifference, I hate it. Jay Cutler, Johnny Manziel, Drew Locke, Jeff George, too cool, man. Too cool, man. It's his game, man. Cool. I like my quarterbacks to be dorks. Peyton Manning's obsessed. Russell Wilson's obsessed. Matt Stafford, get me out of here. I got to win games. You can have too cool guy. Ben Simmons is too cool. He won't work on his game. Embiid scares me to death with his body. He cares. He's productive. He's marketable. He rallies the troops. They had him on the mic last night. He is so into every possession. He cares. Ben Simmons, he's too cool. I saw a story. It's funny. NBA scouts were talking to Ryan Russillo, a buddy of mine, about Ben Simmons on a podcast. And we found this morning. Quote, said a scout to Ryan Russillo, Ben doesn't put in the time. Loves L.A., Hollywood guy. If he ever got serious about improving his shooting, free throws, he could be honest. He's not wired that way. Lots of cool guy with him. I swear to God, I wrote my notes before I read that. But, you know, here's the thing with Embiid. There's one thing I'm worried about, and it's a huge thing, the injury. I admit it. It's we all watch these games. When big guys get hurt early, they get hurt later. It's a huge thing to worry about. But that's all I worry about with Embiid. He cares. He's productive. He's coachable. He's marketable. He's all in. He rallies the troops. He's a leader. And he's a, you know, he's the closest thing to Shaq I've seen. But I always understood when the Lakers took Kobe over Shaq because Kobe was more, he was more obsessed with it. It's not that Shaq was indifferent. So I understood, you know, I'm always kind of reluctant on taking the big over the wing or the guard. I really am. But not when the guard's indifferent. I'm looking at Ben Simmons' numbers last night. After I watched that game, I'm like, he's invisible. He took three shots. Three shots? That's it? I mean, my bad. Like, I'll deal with a big who's going to get hurt again. But there, I cannot deal with indifference. I cannot deal with cool guy. You ever remember a cool guy in high school? Right now, if you're driving your car, you're at work. Think about cool guy. Cool guy in high school. You know what he is now? He's 44. He wants you to care about his golf game and fantasy team. He now works for somebody who was not a cool guy in high school. You can have cool guy. Give me uncool guy. Give me guy that cares. Embiid cares.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Unfortunately, lots of Americans are fooled by loud. Loud is rarely right. Go to a bar, go to a lounge. Loud guy in a restaurant is usually the dimmest bulb. Same on the interweb and Twitter. Only 22% of America is on Twitter. It's people who like to get noticed and are loud. A lot of bad actors on Twitter. Only 6% of the 22% that are on Twitter really use it daily. It's a device to market and promote. I'm on it, and that's why I use it. I try to be decent. I try to be goofy. A lot of bad actors. LeBron, everybody hates LeBron. LeBron, nobody likes him. That's funny. It's a Twitter data came out today. You'd think all 50 states hate LeBron because of that China thing. I've never had a single friend ask me about the China thing. My friends have lives. 26 states of the 50 hate other NBA players more. In fact, the NBA did this exact same Twitter usage data project. And Tom Brady, who is apolitical, was hated by more states. And he's played longer, and he's apolitical, and he's Mr. Nice Guy. Brady was hated by more states than LeBron. I don't know why Arizona hates Paul George. That's a riddle wrapped in an enigma. But it's funny, the states that did hate LeBron, Wisconsin, the Bucks, a liberal state, by the way, the Bucks. Oklahoma, Thunder, Indiana Pacers, New York Knicks, Michigan Pistons, Oregon Blazers, and Utah, a state that LeBron once said nobody ever wanted to play for the Jazz. Yes. Oh, the politics in China and nobody likes him. Oh, folks, don't be fooled by bad actors on Twitter. Tom Brady, Mr. Nice Guy, Family Guy, Supermodel Guy, Never Gets in Trouble Guy, Apolitical Guy, is hated by more people on Twitter than LeBron. And by the way, even in Texas, big old conservative Texas, I gotta hate LeBron. No, they hate Harden more. Oh, what about the South? Oh, they hate LeBron. No, actually, they hate Harden more in Atlanta, Kyrie more in Florida, Kyrie more in Tennessee, Kyrie more in the Carolinas. It's Harden and Kyrie are more hated in the South. Texas. I mean, Arizona's a conservative state. For some reason, they don't like Paul George. I don't know what that's all about. Come on. nobody cares about the LeBron China. I mean, the percentage of people who care are on Twitter. They're loud. You go to parties, nobody's talking about that. I don't, by the way, there's a lot of hypocrisy in all these pro sports. I mean, I remember years and years ago, when the NFL was outlawing hits and talking about player safety, but 25 years ago, they were showing videos to promote the games with these savage hits. It was like, and I love the NFL. It's like, wait a minute, what's the message here? Hits are good, hits are bad. Folks, Brady's more hated than LeBron. In fact, you know what? You want to know who LeBron's haters are on Twitter? It's Kevin Durant's burner account. I guarantee that's half the states right there.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a story this morning. The Packers are going to let Jordan Love talk. So, I mean, he's the Loch Ness Monster. He's the UFO video of the NFL. He's been there over a year. There's no video of him doing anything. They've got a bubble wrap on him. So far, this is from Packer reporters. So remember, Packer reporters are going to lean heavy in favor of good news. He's not been good at camp. 12 of 23 passing, a failed two-minute drill, struggling with accuracy. They won't let anybody really watch any of this stuff. They won't let him talk. So this is the Packers' worst nightmare. They screwed up their relationship with their current star quarterback, and their replacement can't play yet. Also, Aaron Rodgers' teammates, Devontae Adams and David Bakhtiari, who are great NFL players, Hall of Fame-level players, both came out yesterday and said, we've got Aaron Rodgers back. Nothing against the Packers, but we've got his back. I keep hearing these Packer coaches say Jordan Love's come a long way, and my takeaway is, well, how bad was he last year? He's struggling this year. Matt LaFleur did at least talk about him yesterday and was precise when asked questions about Jordan Love.
He needs every rep he can get right now. He's a young quarterback that was not afforded a preseason last year, and so give him as many as he can handle, and we'll you know, spell him every now and again. But I just think every rep that he takes is so valuable, and you can learn something from both the good and the bad.
Okay, that's not word salad. That's a real question somebody asked. That's a real answer by Matt LaFleur. He needs reps. Everyone helps. He has good and bad. All right, I'm good with that. That's the first legitimate answer. And nothing against Matt LaFleur. I didn't like the way last year ended with his coaching decisions. But nonetheless, that's a real answer. He's not talking in circles and using all these cliches. He needs every rep he can take, good days, bad days. It's uncomfortable. But, you know, Brian Gutekunst is the general manager. I don't know him. I do think the Packers generally are pretty well run. You know, Bart Starr, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, they get the quarterback right a lot. They do a great job of developing offensive lines. They took three offensive linemen, six in the last 2 years. You know, four of them will end up being Pro Bowlers. That's what the Steelers know, receivers and linebackers. The Packers know offensive line. But Brian Gutekunst, the Packers don't want to fire him because they don't want to set a precedent, which I think is stupid. Sometimes there are. Howard Stern was a precedent. Make rules for him. Change rules. Aaron Rodgers, you may have to change some rules. But if you're a general manager and you tick off your star MVP quarterback and you butcher his replacement, you could get fired for that. That's not being petty. That's not good enough. It's the most important position. So, and remember, I hold NFL GMs to a higher standard than I hold NBA GMs. NBA, you're getting international footage. I mean, remember when Luka got drafted? There was two pieces of tape. He kept running the same tape over and over. You have 1 year of college tape. And in college basketball, you have very few pros. So 90% of the tape you have is Jalen Suggs of Gonzaga playing against guys who will never play in the NBA. You get an Alabama player on tape for 3 years, he's playing Auburn, Florida, Georgia. That right tackle is going up against edge rushers throughout the SEC. They're all playing in the NFL. You should not whiff on picks. in the NFL. Now, and I understand guys get hurt and stuff, but there are general managers in the NFL that draft really, really well 4 to 5 years. You should. You know, if I said who's the best drafting GM in the NBA, nobody comes to mind because it's hard. Like, great drafters. Danny Ainge, I always thought was pretty good. Hit one home run with all those picks. One. And a couple of doubles.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Can I go on a rant for a minute and a half?
Yeah,
so Joy
can.
Gets a lot of crap from Detroit Lion fans. Like, Lion fans, look in the mirror. You're like the laughing stock of the league now that Cleveland's good. So it's a prime example. Whenever I see a company make a horrible decision, not that necessarily I've worked at, but I see a company that makes a bad decision, like a boneheaded decision, my first guttural reaction, my instinct is, oh, that's a company that has a culture of speaking out against speak. You know, you can't have an opinion unless you're the boss. I am the boss. My opinion matters. Because if you have a culture with a company where everybody gets an opinion, like you sit in a room and there's a man, there's women, there's African-Americans, there's all sorts of diversity, and everybody's got opinions, you generally don't make huge mistakes because you get a bunch of different angles on stuff. I have a friend who owns a business. He always says, I've got a woman with neck tattoos all over. I've got religious people. I just want a bunch of opinions because I don't want to miss anything. And if you'll have a hole in your game if you only listen to people just like you. You'll have a hole in your game. You won't see. My wife sees stuff. She's a creative. She's an artist. She says stuff and sees stuff I don't even see. I'm like, what? How did you? How? I don't know. She's a different pair of eyes. She is wired differently. She's an artist. She's a designer. So I always ask her opinion on my career. She doesn't know sports, but I'm like, what are you seeing with my career? What are you seeing with my kids? I just want a different opinion. So I'll give you a great example. When ESPN on Monday Night Football put Booger McFarland on a crane, nobody in the room raised their hand and went, what happens when it rains and snows? He'll be blocking fans. This is a horrible idea. They got rid of it after a year. It was embarrassing. Did nobody in the room of the 25 people go, this is moronic. He's a smart guy. Put him in the booth and talk. Well, that tells me that one or two people made that decision, did not ask opinions of other people in the room. That's an egregiously bad decision. NBC doesn't make that decision. CBS not making that decision. Fox not making that decision. That's just not a shot at ESPN. That tells me that one or two people made that decision and did not ask for a woman's opinion, for somebody else's opinion, for a young person's opinion. You just laughed at. I mean, the first time I saw it, I'm like, this is who didn't raise their hand at the meeting? So the Lions have been picking on Joy Taylor. And I've said, there is something wrong with the organization because look at the coaches they keep hiring. They keep whiffing massively. That tells you not enough people in the building get an opinion. Not enough people get an opinion in Detroit. Matt Patricia, that's the best you could do. I mean, Tampa got Bruce Arians. There's been a lot of guys. I mean, Rams got Sean McVay. Niners got Kyle Shanahan. We've seen a bunch of home run hires. We saw Miami Dolphins. Brian Flores, Sean McDermott Buffalo. There's great coaches everywhere. Matt Patricia. So this tells you what concerns me about the Lions. They've come out with a new hat. Look at the hat. It's got an L for losers, for losing. There's a term on the internet. That's an L. The Lions have the losingest franchise in pro sports has a giant L on their hat. That's too few people having an opinion on the hat. Not a single person went, time out. We're the losingest franchise in the NFL. We're going to get roasted for this. A big L on the Detroit Lions hat. You don't get an opinion on Joy. Not one. If you would have had one young person in the room, who does social media. They would. I picked up on this, and I'm not sitting around on Instagram all day. I was like, L? Put a D. What? Don't put an L.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Nick Nurse has only been coaching in the NBA for 3 years. Fascinating story, but he's already won a championship and already been coach of the year. He won championships in the D-League. He's coached the Canadian national team. He coached in Europe forever. And as the game gets more international, he knows international basketball, so he can help with scouting with his team and opinions there. Super smart guy, and he is now joining us live, Raptors head coach. So, you know, it is interesting. We were just talking about this earlier today. Michael Jordan would face, you know, he had Tony Kukoc. There was an occasional European player, but now they're among the best players in the league. Giannis and Luka, and the Joker just won the MVP. And, you know, I watched Luka, and I'm like, okay, how is he this gifted at 22 years old? Like, this doesn't make any sense at all. He plays like a 32-year-old. And I said to the other day we said on the air is that Dallas cannot just worry about the draft. They have to get him a guy ready to win now. He's too mature. You spent 11 years over in Europe. Why are the European players often a little more skilled earlier than our guys? Luka doesn't even look like a 22-year-old.
Yeah, the only thing I can say on that, Colin, is I visited, I'd go to Lithuania and visit some of those basketball schools. You know, Šarūnas Marcelionis had a little school, and I remember seeing a whole gym full of 9, 10, and 11-year-olds, and they were all playing pick and roll, both parts of it. They were both picking and rolling and dribbling and passing and shooting, going from basket to basket to basket. And I was sitting there, man, that's interesting. These long, lanky 9, 10, 11-year-olds are playing the total game. That's the only thing I could say, maybe.
Yeah. Well, it works. So when you look, you know the Eastern Conference very well and the Western Conference. I want to talk West first. So Phoenix Suns have Chris Paul. I think Chris Paul is the most underrated player in the NBA. Awesome. Perhaps in my lifetime. He's not glamorous. He doesn't dunk. He's not highly vertical. But you have a player like Kyle Lowry that shares some of those skills in that it's hard to quantify intelligence and feel for the game and intensity. And when I watch Chris Paul, take me, because Lowry's got some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What do fans in the media not see with like a Lowry or a Chris Paul? What do I not see that matters?
Well, I don't know if you don't see it or not, but first thing is toughness. He's as tough as he comes. Same with Kyle. As tough as he comes, he's gonna guard guys a lot bigger and stronger. He's gonna block out guys a lot bigger and stronger. They're gonna compete at all times. And I think that one of the big things too with Chris Paul is I really feel like he has such a good grip on the game. And when his team needs a bucket, he goes and gets him one. He doesn't overdo it, but when they need a big bucket or when they need something important, he'll do it. He'll do it a lot of fourth quarter scoring. Just, you know, that 15 to 17 footers on autopilot, and that's a pretty nice weapon to have when you're that tough and smart at the same time.
You know, it's interesting. Everybody loves the 3-point shot, and as a math equation, analytically it works, but then you have guys like Chris Paul and Kawhi, who you coached, whose mid-range games are Jordan-esque. Where do you, like, Kawhi is a great example. Hell, you can't stop his mid-range game. I know the math tells me he shouldn't shoot it, but when you got him for that short period of time, how did you reconcile that? The game's telling you shoot threes, and he's a great mid-range shooter.
Well, he's up there in the category of being so great at it, the math does almost equal out, Colin. That's one thing. And two, you got to get some buckets, and a lot of times that's your best shot. You can work it around and do all kinds of things to take a less contested more contested three. You'd rather have him taking that shot. I mean, he shoots at that high percentage, and I think there's some other things that factor into it too. He draws fouls at that area. You know, like DeRozan's a great example of that. He'll shoot a lot of mid-rangers, but he'll also draw a lot of fouls from there too with the pump fakes and all that stuff, and that takes you into even a more analytical shot.
Nick Nurse, Raptors coach. So, you know, I was a little cynical on Brooklyn. I said, man, you're getting three of the top four offensive players in the game, three of the top five. Somebody is going to have to be the distributor at times, and Harden, to his credit, has said, okay, I'm going to take fewer shots, which is not always easy. Did you think Brooklyn, did you buy into it the first second, or did you have a little bit of, man, that's a lot of offense. These are unbelievable. Somebody's going to have to pass it occasionally. Take me into your mind when Brooklyn was assembled.
Well, I think that, certainly they were not only were they assembled. I think the guy getting the least amount of comments in this thing is Sean Marks. He's put together an unbelievable team, not only for getting these guys, the three, you know, KD is possible to guard, that face-up size and shooting. Kyrie's ball skills and shooting as well are amazing. And then Harden does everything. He drives you downhill and draws the fouls and zings it out for what I call 100-mile-an-hour fastball jump shots for everybody else. But there's a lot of other guys on that team too. You know, Blake Griffin looks amazing. Harris is awesome. They got some great size and some hard playing. I would call them hard playing defensive guys that are doing a role at a super high level.
Are you I've watched Milwaukee and it the reality is, and this is years and years ago, Steve Nash played for the Suns and they were so difficult, Nick, to prepare for in the regular season. I mean, you play the night before, the Suns roll into town, Nash is going 1,000 miles an hour. But if I get to play a team, you know, 7 times in 15 days, could I make the argument with Milwaukee that you did a really good job? Not that you can completely marginalize him, but there is a way to play Giannis when you get to play him over and over that's easier than he comes into town. You're tired. I mean, I just watched Milwaukee and I'm like, boy, I saw Nick Nurse do it. I watched Brooklyn do it. Milwaukee may be built more ideally for the regular season. Is that fair?
I don't know about that, Colin. I think I think you're going to see them play a lot better here in game three. You know, I do. I think, you know, talking about Giannis, you don't really have much choice than to defend him the way we did a couple years ago, or the way these teams do. I mean, he's coming downhill with this incredible size, speed, strength, and you can't, unless you use two or three guys, there's nothing you can do, right? And he's going to have to deliver it out to the other guys, and they're going to have to make a good percentage of the threes that they take on his kickouts. That's it.
Yeah. Who do you see coming out of the West and why?
Whoa, man, I tell you what, it's a hard one. I think I could see anyone coming out that's left. I would say, listen, Quinn's a good friend of mine. We coached against each other in the D League/G League. So we go way back. I'm pulling for him. Obviously he's going up against Kawhi and Coach Jeremy, another guy that worked for me there at the Clips. And I like T. Lou a lot too. So let's say one of those two. Yeah. Whoever wins that series, we'll say. And shoot, man, I love your argument too. I love Chris Paul too. So it's tough out there.
Yeah.
For sure.
By the way, when you watch all these teams, Brooklyn is built with trades. Milwaukee is mostly built organically through the draft. Toronto has generally, Kawhi is an exception. There's a lot of stuff, you draft players, develop them. How do you, because LeBron's moved all over the league, and yet his teams generally have good chemistry. If I told you the perfect way to build a basketball team, because we're going to get into the free agency period here, what is the, you won your championship taking a guy, bringing him into your culture. What is the perfect way, if you could have the perfect way to build that championship metal toughness chemistry?
Well, I mean, you look at the way we did it, Colin. I think there was a lot of young player development there. We brought some guys like Freddie Van Fleet and
yep.
Pascal Siakam.
Yep.
And we had a veteran guy in Kyle that was kind of like the leader and the core of that whole thing. And then we were obviously able to add, you know, Kawhi, Danny, and even Gasol midseason. Some guys that had been deep down the road and done it before, to a kind of youthful, up-and-coming group of guys that were, you know, I would say our core of our team. So it seemed to work for us. I don't know. There's a lot of way. I think there's a lot of different paths to get there, Colin. I really do. It was It was a good way for us to do it, though.
By the way, you've been in basketball for 25 years. This is the most talent I've ever seen in the NBA. Would you agree with that?
Well, it sure seems like the offensive talent's through the roof, right? I hear you giving your lists of top 10 best players, and you're getting to some really good guys that you're having a hard time squeezing in the top 10, right? There's every night out, it seems like there's one or two, sometimes three, depending on the team you're playing, guys that you're shaking in your head thinking, man, how are we going to guard these guys? How many schemes do we have to put together? How many different matchups are we going to have to throw at these guys? And I guess the only thing I ever say is even the teams with all the great guys, they can only one of them can shoot it each time up the floor.
Right. Absolutely.
So you got to guard that guy the best. You got to guard that guy the best, whoever's going to shoot at that time, right?
He's already got a title, a Coach of the Year award, Toronto Raptors head coach Nick Nurse, one of the good guys. So nice to see you again. Have a nice, fairly brief off season. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Thanks, Colin. Appreciate you, man.